It's about 6 minutes after three. The Weather Service is advising that the temperatures are going to warm up about midweek. And what they're saying is that that's going to cause probably 1 to 2 inches of rain to fall on top of this big snowpack that we have right now. So the net effect of that is that the snow is going to get really heavy. And so they're saying that while it's not that heavy, we ought to get it off of things that are going to collapse under the weight of heavy snow. So it might be time, if you have a weak roof or something like that, to scrape that off. And the other thing that they're advising is that after the initial weight of the snow comes, then the next thing that happens is that we're going to have a lot of melt, and that melt is going to kind of tax the storm drains a little bit. So they're saying if you have a storm drain that needs to be cleared out or cleaned out, you might think about doing that while it's still easy to do, because the freezing level is going to rise, and that also will bring about avalanche danger that increases all along the mountains up to at least 3,000 feet. So by midweek, by this midweek, I guess, we're starting to look at that warming trend happening with a lot of rain. So I'm hoping that by Friday, that makes it easy for people to walk around town, because this is, of course, First Friday. And my first guest today on the show is Susan Hickey with the Downtown Business Association. And you have an event going on that starts on First Friday and then goes on for a little bit longer, I think.
Yeah, actually, it's Gallery Walk this week. Right.
And Gallery Walk.
Yep, it's like First Friday, only it's Super First Friday. We do this once a year, Gallery Walk, and there's so much going on downtown, and we won't have time to really talk about that. But I did want to talk about the Downtown Business Association's fourth annual 12 Trees of Christmas Charity Walk. 12 Downtown Business Association members each pay $100 to support a tree they decorated, and they choose a charity to support. And the public walks around, votes on the trees, and the tree with the most votes, this year we changed it a little bit, there are going to be two winners. We have $1,000 that's been collected among these merchants, and the tree with the most votes will get $500. But then this year, the other 11 trees, their names will be put in a hat, we'll draw it, and that charity will get $500. So it's really fun, and it's just kind of a fun little competition between businesses. You know, we all try and go out and drum up votes for our tree. We ask everyone to please vote just once for the tree. There are special ballots that list all of the 12 trees, and there will be a map coming out, I believe, in this week's Capital City Weekly. There will be posters downtown to let you know. And also, I wanted to mention that John Blasco, the head coach for the Thunder Mountain basketball, boys basketball team, will be bringing 15 boys downtown, to young men, to sing carols. And they will be in the Gonacadie Park on the corner of Front and Franklin by the live Christmas tree. It used to be live, it's cut down, but it's a fresh cut Christmas tree that will be lighted in the park. And the boys will be singing there. This is a fundraiser for their team. So as they sing, I'm sure there'll be a little place for donations that would help them out with their travels.
And all of this is on Friday.
This is all Friday. Yes, the kickoff for the tree walk is Friday, but that continues until December 18th. So if you can't make it downtown for Gallery Walk, you can certainly come downtown anytime and get a ballot from one of the 12 tree businesses and vote.
I have a pre-publication map here that I one of the nice things about being on radio is you get to see stuff before it comes out in the newspaper. Anyway, so the businesses are the Alaska Cash Liquor Store, the Aware Shelter. That's their
charity.
Donation. Their charity is the Aware Shelter. The Alaskan Hotel is sponsoring Gastineau Humane Society. Annie Kales has the Salvation Army. Boehm has St. Vincent de Paul. The Capital City Weekly office has Cancer Connection. First National Bank of Alaska has Helping Hands. Foggy Mountain has Big Brothers Big Sisters of Juneau. Hearthside Books has Juneau Symphony. The Jewel Box has Juneau Ski Club and their Mighty Mites program. The Juneau Imagination Station has Southeast Alaska Food Bank. Rainbow Foods has the Juneau Family Birth Center. And Shoofly has Love, Inc. So those are the 12 businesses that each have a decorated tree, and basically you get your ballot. Where are the ballots? Is this first stop kind of thing? Anywhere along the way?
Well, the 12 businesses that are sponsoring a tree will have ballots.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can pick up a ballot at any one of those, and you can hang on to your ballot until you walk around and see all 12 trees mm-hmm. and drop it off somewhere later in the week.
Just mark it and then mm-hmm. drop it into mm-hmm. any of the ballot
yes.
boxes. Okay. And then when is the award made?
I believe the ballots will be counted Monday morning the 19th,
okay.
and the Downtown Business Association will contact the winning tree charity.
Okay. And mm-hmm. in the past, there's almost always been a picture in the Capital City Weekly
correct.
That shows
yes.
the check being
yes.
Being
yeah.
Deposited and all
yeah.
that sort of stuff. Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is. It's
it
a
is.
Nice
yeah.
event.
Yeah.
So Gallery Walk Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Anything really special besides 18 singing basketball players?
Well, I think you said 15. But
15.
That's close.
Okay. 15 singing.
Yeah, and they will be dressed for the occasion. Apparently, John said they're going to have, I don't know if it's their school sweaters or special sweaters, and then they're wearing some hats. So I think it will be lots of fun. And the boys, he said, are really excited about it. So it will be fun to hear them. And, oh, gosh, there's so many things going on downtown. Hearthside Books... we're having Lorraine and Romer Durr down. They have a cookbook from Shea Alaska, their business at the mm-hmm. Nugget Mall, and they will be having samples, I believe, from their cookbook at Hearthside.
So yeah, well, that sounds like a very good thing.
Yeah.
Well, a little Christmas music to set the stage for this, I think.
Okay.
Little music there of the Christmas season, a version on guitar with instrumental version of O Tannenbaum. My next guest today is Ken Fix. Ken appears with us practically every time the show changes at the observatory here, observatory planetarium. And Ken, this week is continuing the tour of the solar system. What's the plan?
Well, this is the seventh planet from the sun, so we're doing Ouranos and Uranus. That's tonight's presentation.
Probably people haven't heard that pronunciation of Ouranos before. What is that?
Ouranos was the original king of the gods in Greek mythology, but since the Roman nomenclature had been used to name the other planets, they decided to use Uranus when they got out there. The planet was almost called Herschel, after William Herschel, who discovered it in 1791. And for a time, since King George was in power, this is the same King George that was in power when the Revolutionary War took place. So it was almost called the Georgian Star.
Hmm.
Which is kind of funny because it's a really dim planet and it's hard to see, so calling it a star would have been just way off. But there was a German astronomer that worked out the orbit of the planet, and he suggested that it be named Uranus after the first king of the gods, since the next planets in are all, you know, his descendants and offspring. Mm-hmm. So you go to Saturn, who was the second king of the gods. Then you go to Jupiter, who was the third king of the gods, and that corresponded to Zeus in Greek mythology.
So Uranus had quite a tough time with the family. I don't know if there's any reflection on that with the planet. What do we know about Uranus?
As far as the god goes?
No, as far as the planet goes.
Oh, the planet?
We have close-up photographs nowadays of most of the
All of our photos are basically coming from the Hubble and the Keck Observatory in Hawaii on the ground, and the Hubble Space Telescope has taken several images of it. But it's other than its odd rotation and a few other features, it's a rather unremarkable place. The only visit has been made by Voyager 2 in 1986, and it's unlikely that we're going to send any space probes out there again because it's a rock that basically is a smoggy ice ball, very close to absolute zero in temperature. Specific gravity is less than Earth, so if there was something solid you could actually stand on it, it's only about 9/10 of Earth's gravity. And it's very unremarkable, unlike what we found around Saturn with a moon that actually is spitting out liquid salt water and has the highest potential for life in the entire solar system. Uranus has nothing. I mean, it's just a smoggy ice ball with a few satellites and a system of very dark rings. It does orbit on its side, though. Its orbital rotation is inclined about 99 degrees to the solar plane. So instead of spinning like a top like we do, it rotates on its side. So if you were on the North Pole on Uranus, you would have 42 years of the sun spinning around in the sky, and then it would go below the horizon. You'd have 42 years of darkness. So, yeah, it rotates. It's got an 84-year rotational cycle around the sun.
So people in Barrow think they have it bad, but...
Yeah, that's I think... close to absolute zero and 42 years of darkness would be pretty bad.
It's not going to be a vacation spot. I can see this.
No, and it's really of very little interest to astronomers right now, so I don't think that there will ever be any missions heading out to it.
So, Ken, what's next?
As far as a presentation after this?
You must be going to do Neptune next.
Yes, that's going to be on January 31st. I'll do Poseidon and Neptune will be the next one in the planet series. We do have an Astronomy for Kids presentation that's also at the planetarium tomorrow night, and that is from 6 to 7 p.m., and a good friend of mine, another volunteer named Clark Branch, is going to be running that.
And what happens at Astronomy for Kids?
Oh, they get to kind of make meteors hit the Earth and watch as, you know, something drops into a big container full of, like, baking soda and stuff, so they get to watch and see how that impact creates what would look like craters. They're going to act like planets and zoom around in the planetarium and rotate and stuff. So it's just activities that are aimed at children, getting them interested in astronomy and getting them a little bit more knowledge of how the solar system works.
What time would people need to bring their children?
That's tomorrow from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Okay.
Well, the show tonight is from 6:30 to 7:30,
so.
And there will be a Stars Tonight presentation before my series on the mythology. As far as myths go, there isn't a whole lot associated with Uranus and Uranus, so I had to dig back, and since I'm covering the first of the ancient gods, I'm covering the oldest myth, which will be Jason and the Argonauts.
Ah, okay. So what's the attendance like? How many people come to these events?
Oh, well, we'd like to get as many people as we can, so any of you out there listening, hey, come on by the planetarium. The shows are free.
Yeah.
What else have you got going on?
And there's no charge.
There's never a fee for any of our shows,
okay.
Although donations are graciously accepted whenever they happen to arrive. We're happy to have people show up, and presentations, anywhere between about 30 and 50 is probably the norm.
Oh, wow. So it there's a reasonable crowd that comes from.
Yes, fairly well attended, and
but
usually our end of the year show, which I will not be presenting, will probably be in higher attendance than that. Last year when we did that show and I started the Planet series with Hermes and Mercury, we had about 80 people in attendance. And that was probably one of the highest attended shows that we've had lately.
So, Ken, times again tonight?
6:30 to 7:30 p.m. tonight, and the Astronomy for Kids show tomorrow night at the Planetarium from 6 to 7.
Thank you very much for telling us about this.
Thanks again, Pat.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 29th of November, 2011. It's the birthday of Bronson Alcott, 1799, and also the birthday of his daughter, Louisa May Alcott, 1832. Father, a transcendentalist philosopher, the daughter, the author of Little Women. Bronson Alcott founded a commune. It's called Fruitlands, became a vegan before there even was that word. But Fruitlands failed miserably, and Alcott got by on loans from others, including his friend Ralph Waldo Emerson. But the Alcotts were often without money. And when she was 15, Louisa said, "I will do something by and by, don't care what, anything to help the family, and I'll be rich and famous and happy before I die." Her first literary success was Little Women, and the money she made provided her father with his first financial security. But what she really loved was writing lurid Gothic romances under the pen name A.M. Barnard. Bronson Alcott died March 4th, 1888. A few days before, he had told his daughter, "I am going up, come with me." She said, "I wish I could," and as it turned out, she died just 2 days later of a stroke at the age of 55. It was on this day, 1877, Thomas Edison demonstrated his new phonograph for the first time. It never occurred to him that people would ever want to play music on it. He thought he had invented a talking telegraph. It's the birthday of C.S. Lewis, born Belfast, 1898, who became an atheist in his teens, eventually returned to the church. He said, "I gave up Christianity at about 14, came back to it when getting on for 30. Not an emotional conversion, almost purely philosophical. I didn't want to. I'm not in the least a religious type. I want to be let alone, to feel I'm my own master. But since the facts seem to be just the opposite, I had to give in." Author of The Chronicles of Narnia, which he wrote to introduce Christian themes to children. Here's a poem for today by Len Roberts, Learning Animals and Insects in Third Grade. I could hear the horse neigh in that third grade class, its big head poked over the pictures, white picket fence, while sister told us the old useless ones were sent to Alpo or Zweiger's glue factory on Cherry Road, each of us looking around to see if it was true, seeing all kinds of snakes sloughing their skins and bats hanging by their claws in the dark caves underground, a giant turtle on its back gasping for breath as we sat straight at our desks and yelled out which ones lay eggs, which ones bore their young, listening to the whales as they circled the globe, listening to Ray Martineau's asthmatic breathing that fell like the falling snow, shh, against the dripping window, one of every kind of beast circling us, all their eyes mirroring our eyes back, except for the ants, who never stop tunneling into their glass-caged earth, busy from the second our lights went on with their tunnels that went sideways and up and down, sudden small pockets of silence in which they passed along the shadowed, erratic trails that dead-ended against invisible walls and then doubled back again and again in that late upstate New York winter day. A poem by Len Roberts, Learning Animals and Insects in Third Grade, from Counting the Black Angels, published by the University of Illinois Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Constant Contact, helping small businesses use email marketing with social media to reach more customers in more places. Online at constantcontact.com. And by Novo Nordisk, since 1923, committed to diabetes care and areas of unmet medical needs at novonordisk-us.com. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
How come everybody's got a CD but me?
Gold Street Music presents An Evening with Michael Truex, Saturday, December 3rd at Resurrection Lutheran Church, 7:30 p.m. The opening act will be Mark Hurd and Steve Houlihan. That's Michael Truex in concert, Saturday, December 3rd, Resurrection Lutheran Church. Tickets are available at the door.
The Michael Truex concert, again, is coming up Saturday, December 3rd. My next guest is the coach of the swim team at JDHS, and she's here to talk to us a little bit about the swim team, but also about an event that they're putting on for the holiday season that is one of their big major fundraisers. Kathy Milhorn is here.
Hi.
Coach of a very successful swim team, I should say. Swim, yeah. Dive team, I guess, both.
Yeah. We've been pretty strong in years past, and our girls' team was strong this year. They placed fourth overall at state, and they won the Region 5 meet for Southeast Alaska. So, yeah.
Region 5 includes what schools?
Region 5 is the Southeast schools, so Haines, Sitka, Thunder Mountain High School, Juneau Douglas High School, Petersburg High School, Ketchikan High School, Craig High School, and Metlakatla High School.
So is swimming such a good sport? I see these wonderful stories in the papers that our teams have done really well. Is swimming like a natural sport for Juneau? Is it because...
It's a great sport for Juneau because the kids can do it year-round. There's travel opportunities. The kids become this big family. And they actually, most of the kids probably start when they're between 6 and 8 years of age with Glacier Swim Club. And so that kind of feeds into high school swimming. And sometimes kids will quit when they're 9 or 10, and they'll come back to swimming when they get to high school because it's so much fun. And it just kind of draws them back in. So it's a great sport. It's easy on the body. It's good for kids who might have physical limitations or like asthma. And it just keeps them busy year-round. And it's a great sport.
When a student goes out for a sport like this, is there what's the impact on academic performance? Is it good, bad? Which way
the majority of kids, they actually succeed academically. They perform at a much higher level academically, and part of that is time management. And these kids learn really early on to have good time management skills. Some of the kids will end up being in the pool at 5 in the morning for practice a couple days a week, which makes it challenging to stay awake during their school day because they've been up late for homework or whatever. Mm-hmm. So these kids tend to succeed academically, and they go to good colleges. They swim in college. They put a lot of time into their pool as well as into their academic studies, and they always seem to do good with that.
Is there the opportunity to win academic scholarships in swimming coming out of Juneau High School?
Absolutely. I think that kids academically, there's some kids getting money. There's not a lot of money necessarily in college swimming anymore, so those full ride scholarships and things are a little harder to get. We definitely have had some kids who've been very successful, left Juneau, and gotten financial assistance at colleges. So, yeah.
So, speaking of financial success, you're about to embark on an entrepreneurial venture, right?
Yeah, Saturday.
Yeah.
We do our major fundraiser every year is Christmas tree sales, and this has gone on for years. And my co-coach, Scott Jones, said that he sold Christmas trees in high school for Juneau Douglas High School swimming in the 90s, and they did it out at Duck Creek Market. And we're located now at Fred Meyer by the gas station.
Okay. And if someone wants a Christmas tree, what do the prices look like?
Mm-hmm. The prices are wide range. We have three different types of trees. We have noble firs, grand firs, and Douglas firs. So if you wanted a 5 to 6 foot Douglas fir, that's $25. If you're looking for something bigger, we have a 9 to 10 foot noble fir for $75. So the price range will be between $25 and $75, just depending on tree height and type.
Now, these trees did not grow in Juneau. So the question is, how do they get here?
We work with Fred Meyer. They purchase the trees for us. We purchase the trees through them, and they're shipped up on AML. So they come up through. AML does the shipping for us, brings the trailer out to Fred Meyer, and then removes the trailer when we run out of trees. So it's a really good partnership.
You have an investment that you have to recoup on this thing. You have to put out a little money in order to be able to pull this off.
Yes, absolutely. We do have to purchase the trees, and like I say, we do that through Fred Meyer. They're very gracious in allowing us to do that every year. And so we, like every other business, there's a little bit of a markup on the trees, but it's a very reasonable price for the quality of the trees that we're bringing in. Our trees are usually amazing. And I hear that they're really good this year, too. So I love working out there and helping the kids sell them because I love the smell of the trees. And it's just really something amazing at this time of year, especially when we have that rainy weather that starts up. It makes it feel a little more like Christmas.
Yeah, we're about to see some rainy weather this week. The Weather Bureau is warning that we have to kind of prepare for heavy snow loads right now because they're saying that we're going to have heavy rain, 2 to 5 inches, I think, from midweek on this week. So you're going to be selling trees in the rain. But
rain or shine, snow, blow, yeah, we're all out there regardless of the weather. As long as we have trees, we'll be there. And actually, there's an age group meet here, the championship meet, this weekend, and so my co-coach and I will be responsible for selling trees on Sunday morning because most of the kids will be at the pool swimming.
Ah, so you can buy from an adult.
Yes, the coaches will be there Sunday morning.
Is there like a big rush at the start? Do you need, if you want a really good tree, do you need to be in there at the opening?
It seems like it's usually a trickle. And last year we sold our trees out, I think, in 2.5 weeks. In years past, the previous year, I guess, it was a little slow. We had trees remaining after our projected end date of mid-December. We were still selling trees a few days before Christmas. Last year, they went really fast, and I think part of that is quality of the tree, and we're anticipating that we will be sold out by December 13th or before. And like I say, when they're gone, they're gone, and we only got like 220 trees. So
220 trees, so yeah. If you want one of these, you need to get in line pretty quick here.
Yes.
And make the transaction, make the deal. If you come on Sunday, you can buy from the coach and the co-coach.
Yay. Yeah. And if you come on Sunday, you can also purchase from Haley Mertz, who will be helping us with our sales. And she broke a school record in the 100 backstroke for sophomore girls.
And
so.
Who just walked in?
This is Clarissa Allmeyer. She's one of our team captains.
Clarissa just got here a second into the interview. Your timing is perfect. So, Clarissa, how long have you been swimming?
I've been swimming on the teams. I started swimming Glacier Swim Club in about third grade, and then I quit doing middle school, and I joined back the summer before my freshman year.
And we've talked about the fact that some students drop out of swimming and then come back in high school.
It's definitely something that I regret doing because swimming is a sport where it's really hard to get back into it after you quit, even for a little bit.
It sounds like you're getting there, though.
Yeah. I want to swim in college next year, so...
That's the goal. Do you specialize in a stroke?
Long distance, 200, 500 freestyle.
200, 500, wow. So that's a ways in the water. You're in there for a while in the race.
Yep.
Yeah. Who are the big competitors?
Maddie Stevens from Ketchikan, big competitor of mine. She both swims the same events I do.
So do you spark off her? I mean, when the two of you are in there, is there a little more of an adrenaline rush when it's Ketchikan?
Well, with me, it's kind of I try to focus my mind on myself because when I try to focus on the person next to me, it messes me up, and I end up going out way too fast, and then it screws over my end of my race. So I try to focus on myself and not worry about who's swimming next to me and just hope that I crush them by the time I get to the end of the wall.
It sounds like we were talking about the fact that there's a lot of time management. There's a real discipline to this thing. You have to kind of get a hold of yourself and get your mind into it as much as your body, right?
Well, yeah, and then managing schoolwork with swimming is definitely a big one. But after you do it for years, you kind of get a hang of it. Freshman year is kind of difficult, but then as the years go by, you realize more how to control everything.
So you can be selling some trees out at the Fred Meyer parking lot?
Yep. I was actually out there on Saturday selling trees with my mom. We sold about 9 that afternoon.
So, again, times on when the tree booth is open?
So we're open Monday through Friday from 5 to 7 p.m., and we are open on Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay, and the trees are reasonably priced, and you're supporting the JDHS swim team by your purchase.
Correct.
Okay, thanks for telling us all that.
Yeah, thank you.
summer I might have drowned, but I held my breath and I kicked my feet and I moved my arms around. Move my arms around. This summer I swam in the ocean and swam in a swimming pool. Salt my wounds, chlorine my eyes. I'm a self-destructive fool. Knows that that's not all. I did the breaststroke and the butterfly and the old Australian crawl. The old Australian crawl. This summer I swam in a public place in a reservoir to move. At the ladder I was informal. Like the former I wore my suit. I wore my swimming suit. Once when you weren't looking, I did a cannonball, did a cannonball. This summer I went swimming, this summer I might have drowned. But I held my breath and I kicked my feet and I moved my arms around, moved my arms around.
It's 20 minutes to, well, it's about 22 minutes to 3 o'clock, or to 4 o'clock. The Weather Bureau has said that we're going to have some heavy rains on top of the snow, so if you have a roof that's weak or something like that, this would probably be a good time to think about how you're going to get the snow off of it.
This is Bird Note. Polar bears symbolize the icy landscapes of the far north like no other animal. The bear's way of life, its very survival, is inseparable from the Arctic pack ice. Less familiar is a remarkable bird that shares with the polar bear this vital link to ice. The ivory gull. Just as polar bears are clad in white fur, ivory gulls are feathered entirely in white, adapted to the whiteness of their world. Long-winged and graceful in flight, ivory gulls breed on the northernmost islands of the Canadian Arctic and other high Arctic sites. They spend the winter near the pack ice. The gulls feed on small fish and other marine life, but also scavenge carcasses, including those left by polar bears. As a polar bear consumes the choice parts of a seal, ivory gulls wait at the edge of the action, intent on sharing the leftovers. Global warming has brought increasing change to the world of ice-dependent species, such as the ivory gull and polar bear. Even though the gull's known breeding colonies in Canada are protected, scientists still consider the ivory gull endangered. This white gull, like the white bear, represents an entire ecosystem at risk, as the extent and the thickness of sea ice is decreasing. There's more on our website at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
There's a concert coming up Saturday. Mike Truax is playing at 7:30 p.m. at the Resurrection Lutheran Church at 10th and Glacier, and he's going to be singing songs by Jesse Winchester, John Prine, Shel Silverstein, Loudon Wainwright III, and more. The opening act for the concert is Mark Hurd and Steve Houlihan, but the concert is entitled An Evening with Michael Truax. So let's have a little sample of Mike's music here.
I'm filled with a lot of lovers and dreams and songs. And mornings usually found us in places we did not belong. But those were the days, those were the days. We listened to the songs Billy Horner wrote and sat there stoned amazed. But we forgot to eat, we forgot to sleep, searching for the perfect ride. So here's to the good old days, baby, one more time. And I remember Rodney saying if he had two shots and a beer, well, he might get some sleep tonight, give his head a chance to clear. And I reminded him of an old girlfriend singing at the Red Dog Saloon. And I recall us doing lots of things that night, and I think we got to bed around noon. Those were the days, those were the days, when the Chicken Ridge Rowdies were the only band in town, but they'd let anybody play. We forgot to eat, we forgot to sleep, searching for the perfect line. So here's to the good old days, baby, one more time. We were wild and young and willing, we still are in some way. And every now and then we still have one of them good old days. And it makes me proud to think out loud of lovers and dreams and songs, and how they always kept me going, and the best ones are never gone. But those were the days, those were the days. We sing under the cover of George's gift shop until we got blown away. Well, we forgot to eat, we forgot to sleep, searching for the perfect rhyme. So here's to the good old days, baby, one more time. Yeah, those were the days, those were the days. So here's to the good old days, baby, one more time.
Mike Truax's concert coming up Saturday night, 7:30. He's going to be at the Resurrection Lutheran Church. Tickets are $5 at the door. You can call Frederick at 523-6999 or Elva at 463-5413 if you've got any questions. So it's a Gold Street Music Concert, an evening with Michael Truax. Good chance to hear some good music. I have two guests in the studio with me who are taking a big part in this weekend's gallery walk, and they're doing a show that I have three examples of here in front of me. Sarah Conroe and Giselle Stone are putting together a program that has to do with words of advice, a not common base for an art-based show. What's up?
Thanks for having us, first of
sure.
all. Well, we are creating a show of collection of words of advice because we're using a letterpress at Alaska Litho.
The letterpress is actually one that they've owned since 1966, and it's the handset type, like the lead type metal font that you lay yourself. So each letter by letter, lay it, create your own plate, and print it manually. So it's been a really fun process learning how to use this pretty old Heidelberg letterpress.
So you're picking are you picking leads out of a
yes.
out of a bucket and
yeah.
dropping them
basically
down on the
basically there's drawers and drawers of font uh-huh. type of these tiny little centimeter wide
and very very small little tiny between 12 and 24 point font and we lay it letter by letter and
is it all
spell
one
it out backwards.
Font? are there multiple fonts?
There's multiple fonts.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I've been joking around.
I guess
25 of them.
Yeah, I'm seeing three fonts here
mm-hmm,
on these cards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this typical? This is the piece that you're going to have on
exactly.
display.
Exactly. Okay. So we've.
So these things are like 4x4.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
We've
okay.
created 30 different pieces, and they're all 4x4 inches.
Uh-huh.
And then once you lay the type, you are running it through the press. So we've probably run around 3,000 prints. They won't all be down there, but there will be examples of every version somewhere between 600 and 700 prints down at the shop on Friday.
So now, how are you producing the image? Because each of these has, like it says, diplomacy and directness are not the same thing, and there's two birds sitting sitting on a limb or something like that and having a conversation.
Right.
Okay. So how did this all get, you know, onto the same piece of paper?
Well, we've been doing a kind of a three-step process. So as Giselle was just describing, the first step was kind of laying all of the handset type and printing it on the press. After we printed them all and cut them down to 4x4, we laid a wash, which is kind of a thin layer of paint, onto the cards. And we've actually used paints and ink. We've used wine.
Coffee,
beer. So we've been painting the cards with basically anything liquid. And then the last step of that process was doing a line drawing that we felt paired with the words that are on the card.
So the images then are hand-drawn.
Yeah.
Right.
So they're all unique.
Yeah, they're all hand-drawn. And we all developed each image. So it's been... That portion of the process is very nice because it's allowed us to do a little more of our... The printmaking was definitely like mass production, much more about the actual press. And then the drawing part has been really nice to be able to... Because we're both have focused a lot on drawing in our past artistic endeavors. So we both do drawings on there. And you can definitely tell that there's two different artists working on them. It's been really fun.
I have another one here that has what looks like maybe an older Times Roman sort of derivative typeface, and there's a very lovely little drawing of what looks like almost a metallic butter dish on one side, and then there's a yellow wash through the thing that goes over to orange on one side of the of the card, and again these are 4x4, and when you turn it over, it's signed. Lovely little thing. And on some really tactile paper, there's a nice feel to the paper. So how did you get the idea to do this?
Well, we were presented
were
with
you
the...
scared by a Christmas card or something?
Well, not too far from that. Actually, the press, which belongs to Alaska Litho, is Giselle's family.
Yeah, my family.
So it started out getting a beer with Giselle's dad, Rich Stone.
Yeah.
And we were at the Island Pub kind of talking about what we could do with the letterpress. And once he gave us free rein, which was very nice of him.
It was very nice. He definitely said, nobody's using it, so go for it.
Yeah, so we were kind of talking about, well, what could we do? We knew we wanted to... kind of focus on something that we could get together in a pretty quick manner and make it interesting for people. So because it's a letter press, you know, we were thinking about words. We kind of went through some ideas, like, do we want to depict the alphabet? Do we want to do something that's geared towards the holidays because we knew it was going to be December 1st, Friday? And actually, I think we were flipping through old sketchbooks.
Yeah, your old sketchbook, actually. And I was looking through one of Sarah's old college sketchbooks, and there was a page that actually said words of advice at the top, and it was just a bunch of quotes from your friends and professors and, like, life advice. And some of it was relationship advice, and some of it's, like, the one that you have there, it just said, butter the pan. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, very straightforward. So that was originally where the idea came from.
So we kind of stole from an old idea. And then that's been just, we spent about a month just compiling as much advice as we could and then culled it down to 30, a collection of 30 that we're going to show this Friday. And we've collected a lot from friends and relatives too.
So
a lot of
A lot of advice or demands. Some of them are more demanding than others.
And the goal too for us, like right off the bat, was trying to be really unique and original with our pieces of advice, but also have them be very we have some categories, like kitchen obviously is a category since we have a butter dish over there, and we have a relationship advice, although we decided most of them can fall into relationship advice. We have personal hygiene advice and some miscellaneous ones. So it's been really fun. The collection aspect of it was really fun, just quiz friends on I asked a lot of friends like what they remembered their grandparents saying, like if there was anything really unique or in particular that they said. And some of them are really like some of the ones that we got were like very overdone, and we definitely didn't want that. We wanted really original ones that were personal to us, but also we could do something with image-wise too, because we're drawing on all of them. So
sometimes we Googled the sayings to make sure they didn't pop up all over Google. It was interesting. You know, my grandma said this, and then we Google it and be like, everybody's grandma said that. You know? So it's been pretty interesting to just kind of, and also just depicting what the advice is. That's kind of the last stage that we've been going through right now. So that's been pretty exciting.
Because some of them are more abstract. So trying to depict it, like the one with the rooster and the hen. It's really, really fun, that process of trying to think of a really unique way
to find the image.
Obviously some of them are a little more literal, but I love those as well.
Yeah, I don't even know. What's your favorite one, Giselle?
I think my favorite one is the panties one.
Do we dare?
This is Sarah and I both like completely agreed that this is our words of advice for ourselves. Was that when in a rush, substitute a shower with a clean, fresh pair of panties. And it was just like one of those things where we were just like,
I'm not sure that I want to know what the visual image that you came up with.
It's really cute. It's a little clothes one. It's underwear on it. So it's not, you know, it's just, but they all kind of have some fun double meanings. And
there's been lots of opportunity for spicy imagery.
When you do something like this, where advice gets into the thing and then you start turning out do you think about where this piece is going to wind up?
These
are for sale. You've got 700 of these, and people can buy them on Friday.
Yes.
Okay, so do you think about, you know?
Yeah, there's kind of different categories of brain approaches in creating something that's marketable. And in this light, you know, there's some really distinct artistic quality and technical ability in making the cards, but then kind of thinking, who are we marketing it to? Some of them are definitely kind of silly. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the panties one is just silly. Mm-hmm. And some of them are pretty, like Giselle was saying, straightforward and kind of imagining that someone could hang it in their kitchen. We are framing. Yeah. We have a framing option, so they do look nice, just matted and framed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thinking some people could just kind of tack them up on their bulletin board. We're asking $7 for an unframed print. So I was kind of imagining my friends buying a bunch and tacking them up wherever and kind of feeling.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was thinking this would be something really fun to just purchase, you know, get a small piece of artwork that a lot of time and, you know, effort was put into, but it's very lighthearted, and that you can kind of either choose to use it, you know, tack it up in your office, in your cubicle, or use it as a much more formal print in a frame, either in your bathroom, like some of the ones, the personal hygiene ones I thought would be really fun to put up in your bathroom, or the kitchen ones in your kitchen, obviously, your dining room. And there are, you know, there's some of them that have some really intricate designs that are kind of definitely spent a lot of time on, and some are a little more simpler line drawings, but all in all, we definitely saw these being as something that you could either take away and use freely, or also kind of treat more formally in a frame.
Okay, so let's go into the future here. All right, so a month or two from now,
mm-hmm.
you're invited to somebody's house for dinner, and they've received mm-hmm. one of these things as a gift. And you walk into the kitchen, and there it is. It's been turned into a refrigerator magnet, and it's hanging on the refrigerator. So at this point, do you say, oh, I did that? Or are you really cool, and you just kind of walk past it and let that be? How do we, what does the artist's mind do with seeing
this thing? I definitely say, I did that.
I would definitely be like, I did that, and I loved doing that. I remember drawing that one.
But that is our goal, is just creating so many 4x4 prints that we can just get into people's houses. And so we are asking for $7 for the small version, because for the unframed version, just because it would be great to take over Juno with all of our little 30 pieces of advice. See him on the fridge. That would be really great.
Yeah, you're going national. This will go viral. The 700 of them, you're probably on YouTube by day after tomorrow. So then I guess there's this other thing that's going on at the same time. You guys have got a whiteboard set up down there?
It's actually a big piece of butcher paper.
Okay.
With there's standard size 8x11 sheets of paper attached to it, and we are asking people when they come to go ahead and write up their own advice. We aren't doing it on a whiteboard because we want to keep them.
Okay.
And
is the plan to make more then?
We've talked about making more, making this first annual words of advice. We'll see, I guess, where we can take it. We definitely had to limit ourselves to 30.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's hard, but that's the idea, is that we limited ourselves, but we'd love to hear more from other people in the community, especially when they're inspired by the ones that we put up on the wall.
You're putting on the show at Alaska Litho downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is the press going to be out there? You going to be able to see it?
Actually, they have been thinking of moving it down there. I don't think it'll get down there by the end of the week, but there are a lot of photos. There's
get somebody with a pickup truck and do this.
Yeah.
I mean, we need to see this thing.
Yeah, it would
be actually pretty cool. It's definitely
it.
Not a small operation. It's a huge piece of equipment.
Uh-huh.
We do have a lot of photos of ourselves working on the press. Which one of the employees of Alaska Litho took. So there'll be visuals of, like, basically the process, and so you'll be able to see a little bit of it. But it is, it's a pretty neat machine.
So gallery walk starts 4 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
And you're at Alaska Litho, which is on 228 Seward Street. You're right across the street from the canvas.
Yeah, we're right across the street. You'll be able to see us in the window.
Okay, and these are going to be $7 a piece. If they're framed, they're $30 a piece, and people are asked to come in and add their words of advice to the words of advice that have already been incorporated in these things,
mm-hmm.
so that maybe we'll have an ongoing deal.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. And we're going to clip up all the unframed pieces and just ask people on our system to take a print that they want and clip up some dollar bills in its place.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So
if you want to put 10, that's fine.
400. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're asking 7 because of the amount of hours that have gone into it, and especially laying all the little type and everything. But we're asking people to remove the piece that they would like to keep and clip their money in place.
Okay, good enough. So Susan Conroe and Giselle Stone. Sarah.
It's okay.
Close. So that's the show. And
yes.
Everybody come down and take a
come
look.
Come down. Yeah.
Thank you.
Remember Christ's
awesome.
Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy.